Welcome to the Next Step Now podcast, where resilience and redemption meet. Join hosts Melinda Doolittle, a multifaceted artist and self-described joy dealer, and David Lawson, a successful small business owner and returned citizen, as they bring you captivating stories of hope and overcoming. Our extraordinary guests will inspire, empower, and leave you ready to take that vital step forward, no matter where you are in life. Are you ready for personal transformation? Then buckle up and take your next step now.
Welcome back to the Next Step Now podcast. My name is David, and I'm telling you now, this episode is a treat. I get to interview my good friend and co-host, Melinda Doolittle, and you are going to love her story. It's remarkable. She is dropping a lot of truth on you today. Make sure you have a pen handy. You're going to write some of these things down. Open up the Notes app on your phone. Whatever you have to do, you're going to want to write some of her sayings and, as she calls them, mama-isms down. Let's jump into the podcast. Melinda, you and I have something in common. We both believe that God uses our past, the good and the bad, to make us stronger for the future.
Yeah.
We believe that our past does not define us. I am more than the guy who went to prison. You are more than, even though a lot of people want to put you in this box, you are more than Melinda Doolittle, the girl who was on American Idol.
I sure hope so.
You are. And you know my feelings toward you, Melinda, and how much I value you, and the fact that you're willing to give of your time and effort and energy to something like Timothy's Gift and like People Loving Nashville, a local organization you give a lot to. It says a lot about you. So I'm going to flip the switch now.
Oh.
Now it's time for you to answer some questions. No more about me, because people want to hear and know about you.
Yeah, I mean, this was really exciting for me, though, to be able to sit and talk to you about your story.
I appreciate you taking time for that. But Melinda.
Yes, sir.
I have listened to a bunch of podcasts over the last 3 weeks preparing for today.
Oh, no.
There are some incredible, there's been a lot of great people to interview you, and I've learned a lot about you, and you have some amazing stories of overcoming, of refusing to take no for an answer, and I think they will directly connect with a man or woman who right now is listening to this, lying on their bunk in a prison.
Okay.
And I think it'll connect in ways that people didn't realize before. So, all right. I heard you tell a story. And if you're okay starting here, if you have something else you want to start with, then feel free. But
I will answer anything.
Okay. Were you really tone deaf?
Oh, gosh. I wish my mother was here for this, because she would be like, ooh, it was a hot mess. Yes. Yes, I was. I grew up loving music. I've just always been a lover of music, and I love how it moves people and all of that. And so wanted to be a part of music. But when I auditioned for a choir, I was living in St. Louis at the time, and there was a choir called the Super Gang, which is a youth choir. And they wore white gloves and black vests and red bow ties. And they did choreography and sang. And I was so excited to go to the audition. And I went to audition. And the man said, you know, I just need you to, I'm going to play some notes on the piano and you just sing it back to me. And I was like, no problem. And so he played the notes and I sang it back. And he was like, let's try some other notes. And he played some more and I sang it back. And he was like, are you able to tell that you're not anywhere close to what I'm playing? And I was like, no, I'm singing
You're
playing. So then he did one note at a time. And I swore I was singing the notes he was playing. And he was like, you're just not close at all. And he was like, there's a term for that. And it's called tone deaf. And he was like, but your energy is infectious. Like, I love it. And so what I'm going to do is put you in this choir, and I'm just going to ask one thing of you. I want you to use all your energy. I want you to smile really big and do all of the motions, but I just need you to not let sound come out of your mouth. And so, for real, for years,
That's crazy.
I was in the Super Gang and I lip synced my way through that. And I mean, was dead center in that choir because I had the energy.
Yeah.
And I had the best time doing it. I was just happy to be part of music and lip syncing. So I did that for some years. And then my mom and I we were like shopping in a shoe store. Uh-huh. And Whitney Houston came over the loudspeaker.
Love singing, some Whitney Houston.
I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
She's singing The Greatest Love of All. And people literally stopped shopping to listen.
So this would have, I'm guessing, what, late 80s?
Yes. So I'm like sixth grade going into seventh and like trying to just figure out life and as a sixth grader. But I watched people stop. They stopped what they were doing and they listened to her sing. And when we got home that day, I was like, Mom, wouldn't it be cool? Like if I was able to sing out loud and I had a voice that made people stop and listen to what I had to say, whatever it might be. Like, wouldn't that be cool? And she looked at me and she was like, ooh, baby, you're going to have to pray hard. And she was so honest with me.
Like,
you don't sing out loud. That's not what you do. And I was going to a church at the time that had this youth group and they had a talent show coming up. And I was like, well, Mom, like, I will pray then. And I'm going to pray that I can sing by the talent show. And I want to sing out loud at the talent show that they're having in a month. So I've got 30 days.
Okay. 30 days to go from the girl who was told you should only lip sync.
Yes.
To get up in front of everyone by yourself and wow them with your voice. You are putting, that's faith.
Well, I didn't know any different with God. Honestly, that's awesome. Like that's that childlike faith. Yeah. I think that we read about so much. Yeah. Like I remembered one time when our lights had gone off because we didn't have the money to pay bills. Mom was a teacher, single parent. Yeah. I'm an only child. The lights went out and I was like, hey, Mom, I need lights to do my homework. And she's like, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. It's going to be a couple days. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, why don't we just pray about it? And she's like, oh, that's not how electricity works, but that is cute.
Yeah.
And so I went to my room and I just prayed and I was like, Lord, I need lights to do my homework. And then I flipped the switch and they came on and I just kept going because it never dawned on me that no was a possibility. So I literally did stuff like that all the time. So when it came to me wanting to sing, I was like, dude, I'm being kind. I'm giving him 30 days. Yeah. Like you got 30 days to do this. Like, so we didn't have the money for lessons or anything like that. So I would lock myself in my room after school and I would pray really hard. And then I'd practice because there was this verse in the Bible that said faith without works is dead. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I can't just sit here and pray and not actually do something. Like I couldn't pray for the lights and not flip the switch.
Yep.
So I'm not going to pray for a voice and not open my mouth like that. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. So I'm going to pray and practice every day for those 30 days. And that is what I did, basically.
So what were you singing to in those 30 days?
So Mom bought me two soundtracks on cassette tape. And one was Oh, the Blood of Jesus. And that was the only one that I really loved. And so I sang that. It was this guy, Nicodemus, that was on the Gospel Bill show.
Okay.
And I just really loved Nicodemus. He was my favorite character because he sang really cool songs. And so I learned Nicodemus's version of Oh, the Blood of Jesus. And I remember going to my youth pastor and saying, hey, I signed up for the talent show. And he was like, hey, I need you to know that you're not allowed to lip sync at a talent show. Like you actually do have to sing out loud. And I was like, I know, I'm praying for God to change my voice. And he was like, well, let's see what God does. Like, I mean, he was trying to be as supportive as possible, but also like,
your poor child,
protect me.
You're about to be let down.
You know, like he was like, you know, and if you want to wait, it's okay to wait. And I was like, no, I'm going to be good. And so I don't remember the exact date of the talent show. You're good with dates. I'm not good at that at all. But I remember getting on the stage. I can see the stage. I remember getting the microphone and closing my eyes and the track starting. I don't remember the song at all. I remember when it was over, opening my eyes and seeing people standing to their feet and clapping. I remember seeing my mom in the back crying. And I remember looking at my youth pastor and saying, did he do it?
And he was like,
oh, did he? Like, I don't know what's happened. And it was like my ear opened up in that moment. And I was able to hear harmonies at that point. Like, if you know anything about being tone deaf, harmony would be the hardest thing to be able to do. But harmony started coming to me. Everything opened up for me. It was such a different miracle for me in that moment, because he didn't give me only what I asked for. It was the whole kit and caboodle, you know, like it was everything. Things that I couldn't even dream or imagine. So that's why Ephesians 3:20 has been my favorite verse for life. Like, God can do above anything I can even think or imagine. Like, I just imagined, like, I'm going to have a voice to be able to sing. But he opened up my ear to be able to join other people on stage and to not just be the only artist there. And I am so, so very grateful. And I actually saw that youth pastor when I moved to Nashville.
Okay.
One of the sessions I got hired for, I went in to sing on this session, and it was his project.
Oh, so he was the lead artist.
He was the lead artist on this project, and I went in to be a singer on the session. And I walked in the door, and he was like, Melinda? And I was like, Kent? And he's like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I'm singing on your record. You're paying me to sing on your record today. And it was such a beautiful full circle moment of like, you were there when this started, and you get to be here to see what God is doing with it.
I love that story. I love the childlike faith. And I think I need, as an adult, need to pray for more childlike faith.
Every time I tell that story, I have to remind myself, like, where is that?
Yeah.
Where is that? Where are the guts to ask?
And then just to go flip the switch, assuming it's going to come on.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this story is how relatable it is on so many levels. Mm-hmm. I struggle with that type of faith.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of men and women right now in prison, maybe recently out of prison, who would struggle with, what do I do next? And it seems like a lot of things are being told, no, you don't have what it takes in many ways.
Yeah.
So I love your combination of pray. Yes, absolutely.
For sure.
But
do something.
Do something.
I feel like in life, we're never going to know the full picture regardless, but we can take a step. Like, we can figure it out. I didn't know how to practice singing like that. Yeah. I had no idea how to. So I just was like, let's put in a song and open my mouth. Yeah. Like, I don't even know if this is right, because I can't actually hear it right. Like, but I'm just going to do what I know. That's the least I can do in meeting God when I've asked for something. Like, the least I can do is just try.
So it's like, this podcast is called Next Step Now. For some people listening to this right now, their next step is just a step of something they know that will take them towards what they may not know how the 15th step is going to work.
Yes. And you don't have to be good at that step.
Correct.
I think it was that for me.
Yeah.
Is I tend to now at 45 years old, think that before I take a step, I need to have all the knowledge. I need to have all my ducks in a row. I need to be able to do it well. And that's actually not true. Like, my step happened in the midst of the tone deafness. Like, my first step was, I'm sure, a hot mess. Like, it was not good at all. And I continue to take that step daily and be a hot mess. I did, because I believe that it would change.
Okay. So you go from the girl who was told to lip sync to this, I don't think it's unrealistic to call it this miracle happening in your life.
Yes.
God honoring your steps of faith and your practice to American Idol. Oh. I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff that happened between all of that.
Sure, but
so how do you talk to us about how you get there? How do you get to that stage?
I don't. Gosh, honestly, I went to college here in Nashville and started singing background right off the bat.
Okay,
and loved it. Hmm. Almost forgot about when I asked God for a voice to stop people in their tracks. Like when I asked for that, I was talking about being an artist, but then I found this comfortable spot being a background singer, which was the coolest job ever because I worked with so many different artists and I got very comfortable there and had made a name for myself in that world and was like, this is what I'm going to do. My next step was moving to LA and doing it there.
Yeah.
And so I was good. And
so not the name drop.
Yeah. Okay.
But who were some of your favorite people that you got to sing with?
I traveled with the group Anointed for 5 years.
Loved
and
Anointed?
I was a fan. I had their picture on my wall. So I was so excited. I did background vocals for CeCe Winans, also had her picture on my wall. Could not believe, I still to this day can't believe like we're actually friends in life. I sang on an Aretha Franklin record, for Michael McDonald, for like just people that I'd looked up to for so long. And of course I'm in Nashville. So Alabama and Winona and like,
you sang with Alabama and Winona too?
I did. I sang on their records.
On their records.
Yes. And I sang live, with Alabama once.
I did not know that. I had never heard that on any other podcast. I feel like this is breaking news.
This is breaking news. I sang country. There was a point in time where every country artist was like, must have a group of black people behind me. And I got to come up and, you know, work on my country chops. It made me very happy.
I love that.
Yes.
I mean, it's because there is no genre that describes your style. You are you and do it all.
I got the training. Being a background singer, you have to be a chameleon. So like I got my training grounds were singing every single style of music. So
I never thought about that.
That's all I know. I know how to blend with people. I knew how to sing every style and like make my voice work in that style.
So if you're going from CeCe Winans to Alabama, I mean, you've got to change your voice, how you sing, and how you enunciate everything, I guess.
Everything. You change your vowels. You're literally listening to a singer and saying, oh, her vibrato's different. Oh, she says words like this. Oh, these people have an accent. So I need to add that in.
So it's even different artists within the same genre.
Oh,
you are tailoring to the specific artist, not just the style that they sing.
Every time.
There's a lot more to being a background singer than I ever realized.
It's the hardest job in the world. Being a background singer is truly the hardest job. And people that do it well are my heroes, truly. Your voice has to be able to do anything. And even on CeCe Winans, her Throne Room record, I ended up doing all of the background vocals on 8 of the songs.
Okay.
So that meant singing tenor, alto, and soprano. And it meant singing each part 8 times each to blend with my own voice. And so I did 24 tracks on 8 songs.
Okay, so you sing the same part 8 times.
And you stack on it so that it sounds like this
wall
of sound. So it's all me on 8 of those songs.
That is crazy.
And you have to learn how to... I remember her producer saying, I needed to sound like Enya. And I was like, Enya, must go listen to Enya. So I went home, listened to Enya, came in and made her sound. So that was what I knew.
Okay.
And then I'm getting ready to be in this musical with a friend of mine. Like I signed up to be in a musical because I'm a dramatic person. I don't know if you can tell. And we're in rehearsals and he looks at me and he's like, listen, I'm going to audition for American Idol, and I think you need to go with me. And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I got my niche here. Like, I know what I'm doing. I'm on point.
And at that point, people are asking you to sing on their tracks. You're not having to go seek work. It's like just lined up.
At that point, I was literally working every day. I did not have a day off. People would wait till I got back in town from touring with another artist before they would start their studio dates. I sang every day.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And so he's like, let's go to Memphis and audition. And I'm like, please, why would, I don't want to do that. Like, that is scary.
Yeah.
And I don't need scary because I have a job. And he's like, I really think you should go. And then he told me that I could see all of the funny auditions in person. And that is the only reason I said yes.
The best part of Idol.
It's really
during the audition part.
Like, I wanted to see Big Bird and Spider-Man audition, you know? So we got another couple of friends and drove to Memphis and auditioned for American Idol. And now I'm still a pray and practice person. So I practiced for my audition, but there was nothing in me that thought it was going to go any further than the audition.
Okay.
And when we got there, there were 16,000 people auditioning that day. And I was number 12,427. So I waited for 12 hours with my friends. And you're sitting in this arena watching other singers audition. And they sent the people that made it to the left and the people that didn't to the right. And all you see is this steady stream of people going to the right and very precious few going to the left.
Okay, so when you say made it, these are like pre-auditions to be able to get
to you. Even see the judges.
Yeah, this
is. You're not even there. This is just some producers sitting in an arena.
Weed them out.
Weed them out.
Right here.
From 16,000, they took 280. So they're weeding out like great voices, right?
Okay.
So I get down there with my friends. There's all four of us. And I hear my friend who sings Circles Around Me sing first. And I watch them send her to the right. She doesn't make it. And I'm like, this is a sham. I mean, I was nervous up to that point. And then I was like, it doesn't even matter. Like, yeah. I've gotten what I wanted to get from this. I saw Big Bird actually audition. I also saw Grover audition and the Cookie Monster. So I was like, I'm good.
Sesame Street was checked off.
Completely dead. And so I was like, I really thought it wouldn't matter, like, what happened. And so I just sang. And the guy looked at me and he was like, sing something else. And I was like, okay. So I sang the second song that I had practiced. And then he looked at me and said, what else you got? And I panicked because I only prepped two because that's what the instructions said.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know no other songs at this point. And so I sang Chaka Khan's Tell Me Something Good, which is the worst audition song you could ever sing because it has all the downtime in the world.
Yeah.
And so I honestly basically made a fool out of myself trying to sing that song. And something about that moment and him watching me go dun, 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 in the breaks made him think, she's going to be fun television. And he sent me to the left. He was like, you made it. None of my other friends made it. They had to wait on me. I was petrified. I called my mom. I was like, listen, I made it through this round. I did not enjoy that experience. I will not be continuing. And she was like, did you sign anything? And I was like, it was a tiny sheet of paper that just said I was going to like be at the next audition. Like, it just gave the date of the next audition. And she was like, well, I raised you to be a woman of your word. So I guess you're going back.
Wow. So you have said a lot of stuff in our time I've known you, things that have been, my mama said, there's like a whole episode on my mama said.
Listen, there, you know, there's a book. I have a book. It's not called My Mama Said, but it's called Beyond Me. And it is, each chapter is mommy isms. Things that my mother said that shaped who I am today. Every chapter title is something that she taught me to get me to this point.
I'm blown away.
Yes. So
okay.
I get on Idol and it turns out to be the best fit for me in the world because I'm a chameleon. So they have Country Week and they have Bon Jovi Week and they have Latin Week and this is what I do.
It's what you're used to.
That's all I know is to do different styles and work within it. And so it ended up being a great training ground for me in just the fact that now I'm learning, like, not only are you doing these different styles, but who are you in that style? Who are you in this moment? So it brought something out of me that I truly had no idea was there.
So I've heard you talk about how the 6 feet difference from the back of the stage to the front of the stage is significant.
still to this day, I have an issue with that difference.
Wow.
Being an artist, being up front, having kind of the pressure of interpreting and selling tickets and like people pay money to come there, and if you don't perform correctly, then they've wasted that. Like the pressure of that is it is a lot to take on. I'm grateful that is what I get to do. But that is a lot. So every once in a while, you will see me on stage singing background for somebody so that I can have a palate cleanser. So you can
enjoy just singing, just for the sake of the song in the moment. I'm
like, please just let me just sing and not have that pressure, and then be a support for someone because I understand the pressure that they're going through.
Yeah.
So now when I sing for artists, it is beautiful what we share, because I can be like, hey, I know today was a rough day. I got your back today. And knowing that I can be that for other artists, it's a joy.
Several thoughts are going through my head
now.
No, this is great stuff. One thing, I thought you really do get it, why Tim and I go back. Tim and I and Josh, the guys who've gone through prison, we go back because we know what it's like to have that pressure. And we like to go back and say, hey, we got you. We're praying for you. We're here to give you a little bit of hope. You can do this.
Yes.
So you do get it.
I completely get it.
Okay. Now to totally change tracks.
Yes.
Going through Idol, every week that you made it, did it ever go through your head that I'm one step closer to perhaps winning this from the perspective of what you could gain? But did it ever also go through your head about I'm one step further from being the background singer, and now it's what I'm losing, the potential to go back and be just the background singer?
It was both for me. Yeah. It was both ideas were very scary to me.
Yeah.
Succeeding was really scary, and failing at it was really scary. Yeah. So I learned very quickly when my audition aired, something about my audition connected with people to the point where I couldn't go into a grocery store. I couldn't I couldn't do anything without getting literally chased.
Wow.
And please, just a quick picture. And me, I didn't know what to expect. So when somebody starts running my direction, I run too, because I'm like, what's going on? Apparently something bad's happening. Yeah. We should run. And quickly it dawned on me like, oh, they're coming to me for some reason. And I remember being in a Kroger trying to get a banana, and this person being like, crying in my face, being like, I can't believe I'm meeting you. And this is right after the audition aired. And it hit me, I can't go back.
Things are about to change big time.
Like, they've already changed.
Oh, yeah.
Because now there's no artist that's going to be like, sure, come on my stage. And everybody be like, that's
we want to hear
girl.
Melinda. Like,
so I knew very quickly, like, oh, everything's changed. So my only option now is to succeed, because I can't go back. And that was scary because you're at the whims of America, basically, and these judges that you don't really know.
Okay, the judges. So when you went out for your audition, I watched a lot of those this last week, just so you know. Nope, loved them. From learning the OCD, which I knew a little bit about. If the right hand touches something cold, the left hand has, it's just being equal opportunity.
Yes. I really
it's
like
not OCD.
Even.
Yes, no. There you go. It was Simon, I believe, who said there are a lot of people who come out of here with great confidence, or come out on the stage with great confidence and a lot of attitude, but are not very good singers. But you come out here zero confidence, no like look at me attitude, and blew everybody away. So why the lack of confidence, and how did you overcome that? Because that's a big deal, because there's a lot of guys sitting listening to this right now, men and women, who the confidence just is not there right now. So how did you overcome that?
Well, first of all, the lack of confidence was that I'd spent my entire singing career blending in, and they were asking me to step out.
Yep.
And so that felt foreign. And walking into something foreign, I just did not have confidence in that. Like I knew that I could sing, but I knew that I could blend. Like I didn't know what I had on my own. As far as overcoming that, I would honestly say I haven't completely. It is a daily thing for me, sometimes minute by minute if I have to, but my motto is do it afraid. I think at the end of the day, fear, you can allow fear to paralyze you. And
I'm literally writing that down. Do it afraid. I love that.
That's really it. So I remember it was Latin week on Idol, and J-Lo was our mentor, and she had told me to walk down the ramp going to the stage while I was singing and do a sexy walk. And I was like, I don't even know what that means, lady. Like, you're J-Lo and I am Melinda. I wear flannels. Like, I don't know what you're saying. And that day had been a rough day as far as like, they had done my hair in a weird way and the producers hated it. And they were like, she looks old. She doesn't like, so they scrapped my whole hairstyle, tried again, and it got worse. And they were like, well, show's live, so we'll just have to do it. So I knew that I didn't look right.
Wow.
And then I was trying to be J-Lo walking down a ramp. And I was like, I know that I'm clumsy. I normally fall in this moment. And all I could think was like, you have no choice. Like, there's no choice. Just take the first step and then the next step and then the next one. So you have to do it one step at a time, and you're just going to have to do it afraid. Like, let your legs shake, but walk, because you got to get to that X on the stage. Like, you have no choice. Yeah. And I have been doing it afraid ever since. I get nervous backstage every concert. My band knows to this day, like, we've put in some buffers of like, they'll start the music first. So once I'm announced, they start music, and I shake a little less when I walk to music instead of walking to silence. So we figured out some ways to get around it, but it is every show. It's every time.
Do it afraid. Yeah. I can't tell you how much I love that, that phrase. Like I'm seeing it on posters.
Joyce Meyer.
Okay.
I got it from her. Well, my mom got it from Joyce Meyer, then told me. And
another mama-ism.
It's another mama-ism.
So let's talk about the judges for a second, because if anybody can understand what it, this is a different scenario, but if there's anybody else who feels judged all the time, it was me when I was in prison and when I was arrested and when I got out, I felt like constant judgment.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't real.
Yeah.
It was in my head that I was being judged by everybody. So you literally, I say that word a lot. You are.
But it's for real.
But you are being judged by a panel, but then 30 million people who feel like they have the opportunity to decide your fate.
Yes.
And they're judging you. And then I heard you talk about how some people had the audacity to come up and say things to you and one of your new best friends at the time, Jordan Sparks.
Yes.
She has the looks, you have the voice.
They literally walked up to Jordan and I, and this was right after the season had ended. So we were in New York getting ready to do press. She was doing it as a winner. I was doing it as third place. And they walked up to both of us and they were like, man, Jordan, man, you won because you got the looks, but Melinda, you've got the voice. And like it, in one fell swoop, they just
totally slapped both of you.
Eviscerated both of us. Like, it was like, oh gosh, like I don't look good and you can't sing. Great. None of that is true, but it is what was said. And it continues to be, you know, I put myself on a show that welcomes judgment. Mm-hmm. And so to this day, people will come up to me after a show and be like, I really liked your concert, but I don't like your dress. And I'm like, it has been 16 years. Why are we still, why are we still so comfortable with saying what you don't like about someone? So I still to this day deal with judgment. Mm. And there is another saying, you know, we're just going to do mommyisms this whole time.
Love it.
But
love it.
It is chew the hay and spit out the sticks.
Chew the hay and spit out the sticks.
So the deal is, I lived in Oklahoma.
I'm writing this one down too.
I lived in Oklahoma for a lot of years. There were horses, and I ride horses.
Okay.
This day. And when horses eat hay, they chew up the stuff that is supposed to give them nutrition, that has the nutrients in it. Mm-hmm. Then they spit the sticks out because the sticks otherwise get stuck in their teeth and they harm them and cause an infection. So when criticism comes my way, when judgment comes my way, I take a minute to try to be as honest with myself as possible and be like, what about this is true and can actually be helpful to me? Like, help me get better. Like, is there anything that this person is saying, even though they said it in a way that is not okay? Like, it's not okay, but if there's something they're saying that could be helpful to me, like that I could find a way to better myself with, then I'll take that. Like Simon said one time, hey, Melinda, you sang that like a background singer. Hmm. And I thought about it and I was like, I definitely did not make that my own at all. Hmm. Like that hurt when he said it because it was towards the end of the season. So it was kind of a slap in the face after I'd been working so hard to be an artist for him to be like, now you've gone back. And you sound like a background singer. And I was like, oh, but he wasn't wrong. So I had to chew that up. And it made me stronger. It made me better the next week. But when Simon says, like, I don't like your clothing, and he's sitting there in a Baby Gap t-shirt, I can't, like, I'm going to spit that stick out. You know what I'm saying? Like, so the stuff that people said about me in the press that was just meant to be harmful. Mm. And that was just meant to tear me down. Like I had to spit that out. And it is easier to say than to do. My 98-year-old grandma is staying at my house right now. And I remember calling her when I was on Idol because everyone was talking about how short my neck was. And it was like this big thing. They call me No Neck Shrek.
What?
And it was on TMZ. They superimposed my face with Shrek's. And there was just this whole thing. And so I remember calling her and being like, I'm upset about that. And she's like, well, you know, I've always had a really short neck. And people have had a hard time finding even a necklace that looks right on me. And when I found out that I got it from my grandma, who is like my hero, I was like, oh.
Now it's a badge of honor.
I will use that. But the Shrek part, I'm not Shrek. Yeah. I'm spitting that out. And I think every time somebody says something to me now that hurts or that feels extremely judgmental, I try to be as honest with myself as I can be. Because even if their delivery was wrong, if there's something that can help me grow, I'm gonna try my best. I'm not always great at that, so let me be clear. Where's the camera? Speaking into the. Let me be clear. I am not always great at that. It is just. It is important to me to try.
I love that. Chew the hay and spit out the sticks. Love it. Love it. Okay. Speaking of things that Simon said, if you've ever watched Simon on a reality show, Idol or the one he does now, or other things,
yeah.
If he thinks you're an okay singer but not great, he'll say you'd be good for a cruise ship. And that stayed in your head.
Yeah.
And then you were invited on a cruise ship.
I was.
And how did that play out?
It didn't go well at first. Because he used it as an insult.
Yep.
You know, so when I was asked to go on a cruise ship, I was like, oh no, this, he said, this is where singers go to die. Like, this is not how I want to take my career. Like, this is not the direction I want to go in. And I knew like that this cruise line was going to announce it. So it wouldn't just be that I like silently went on a cruise ship. It would be a whole press tour and all kinds of stuff around me getting on a cruise ship. And I was just like, he said this was bad.
And how many years after Idol, what did this invitation come?
This was only maybe 4 years ago. So 12 years after Idol. And it still was sticking with me that Simon said, like, this is bad.
And that was... It's not like that was 12 years of nothing. That was 12 years of success.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'd sung at the White House, done Carnegie Hall and
recorded a couple of albums.
Wrote a book. I had done, like, I truly had lived a life way beyond any dream I could have ever had at that point. So it wasn't like, oh, this is going against a dream I have. Like, at that point, I literally had already looked at God and said, you have fulfilled everything. I'm unclear what I would want to do next. Yeah. And then this cruise ship comes up and I was like, I can't take it. I actually said no first.
Okay.
My first answer was no. And they did not give up. They came back and they were like, we really want you to do this. And they were giving me the most beautiful offer. It provided for my entire year.
Wow.
It wasn't like, it was this measly little thing. Like, it was something that was beautiful. And I had talked about how tired I was of like traveling and not feeling like I had a place to really call home. Like, I had a house, but I was never there. I wasn't sleeping in the same bed every night. Like, everything was just weird. And then I wasn't able to see the places I was traveling to because I was just getting there and doing the show. Mm-hmm. And this offered me the chance to literally get on a ship, have one bedroom.
Which is significant to you because the germs, the everything, this is a big deal.
I always like clean every hotel room. I had gone through so many Clorox wipes. Like, this time I could clean it one time.
And it's yours.
And it is mine for 6 weeks. And I am visiting other countries and still sleeping in the same bed every night.
Yep.
And I am getting to get off of the ship in these countries because it's only two shows a week. Like, it's not even, I mean, I think I did a total actually of four shows a week, but on 2 days.
Okay.
So I worked 2 days a week and I traveled to other countries, got to see other things, and they were going to pay me well. And I'm like, I said no to that because Simon said it wasn't a good gig. Like, what is wrong with me?
But we let other people's thoughts and opinions influence us all the time.
We do.
And that is something guys in prison struggle with. And when you get out, you struggle. I struggle with that today, what other people think or say about me.
It is still, like, it's always in the back of my head.
Yeah.
But I think something about hitting my 40s just made me be like, I can't continue to live my life based on others' expectations. Like, I can't. One of the first things I did was leave my Christmas tree up.
I love this.
For years. It's been up since October of 2015. And one of the reasons I did that is because everyone said I shouldn't.
Yeah.
But Christmas made me happy. And there I was like, well, why? I'm taking this down just because it's the thing everyone does and everyone says you should do. And I was like, I'm not going to take my tree down. And I left it up. And I remember posting a picture about it sometime in like May. And people just let me have it online. And I was like, you guys are angry about something that doesn't even affect you. You're just making noise at this point. And this tree just makes me happy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do it. And this cruise ship makes me happy. So guess where I'm going? On a cruise ship. And I'm going to eat all the soft serve cones I want.
and expose yourself to a whole different audience around the world.
I literally now have a global audience because of doing two cruise ship gigs. I almost stopped myself because of something someone told me years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I don't still hear that in the back of my head. Mm-hmm. I still hear it. But my voice is louder now. God's voice is louder now. So I'm like, say what you got to say. Get it out of your system. And it might still reside there, but I refuse to be guided by that.
Your real life stories like that have so much application to it. Because it's your stories, and they're fun. They're funny for those of us hearing them today. Yeah. It's a world that we would never be in on the stage of American Idol or whatever. Sure. But it is so applicable. And I really appreciate you opening up and sharing your life, because every time you open up your life again on something like this or on TV in an interview or something, does your mind ever go back to, okay, here I go again. Now I'm putting myself out there again. It's going to start coming back to me somehow. Yes. What criticism?
It does. It has happened. Mm. Like stories I've told randomly hit the press again in a weird way. And now people judge it differently or something because it happened. But honestly, I'm glad it's happening now in this stage of my life where I'm like, bring it. Bring what you got. Yep. Like, I know who I am. I know who God says I am.
Yep.
And I just got to hold on to that.
Melinda, I value your friendship so much.
Back at you.
So thank you. I have enjoyed this conversation.
I have too. I can't believe we get to do this together.
I know. And a lot of fun things coming up, and it's going to be an exciting trip, a fun journey.
Yes, it is. Here we go.
After Melinda and I recorded this conversation, I had the privilege of meeting her mom. And let me tell you, that was a genuine gift. I loved her mom. She's incredible. And I love the things that she has passed down, all those mama-isms that Melinda talked about in this episode. My favorite one? Do it afraid. You know, on this podcast, we say our goal is to challenge and inspire you to take the next step now, no matter where you are. When we look at that next thing in front of us, the next right thing we're supposed to do, man, that can sometimes look intimidating and overwhelming. Or maybe you're like me, where if you don't know steps 2, 3, and 4, then you don't want to take step 1 yet. We are only responsible for the next step in front of us. And I want to challenge you right now, do it afraid. Whatever it is, take that next step now.
Thanks for listening to the Next Step Now podcast. This podcast is a product of Timothy's Gift Prison Outreach, a Christian community taking hope into prisons since 2009. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email to info@timothysgift.com or write us at P.O. Box 111642, Nashville, Tennessee 37222.